everyone. I'm Kirsten Davidson, your host and creator of my wellness podcast, Mind the Gaps, surrendering our typical ways of looking at life to step out of our comfort zone and into our growth zone. Welcome to episode number 3, Gratitude for Pain. Today, I'll be talking about how practicing gratitude can help us lead meaningful lives, no matter our life circumstances. To find meaning in the beautiful things in life and the most painful things is to be truly untouchable. It's really like a superpower. For all things Mind the Gaps, you can find me on Instagram at kirsten.davidson. That's kirsten.davidson. I'm happy to answer any of your questions, comments, or feedback, and most of all, I'm happy to have you as part of the Mind the Gaps community. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy. I like to define my gratitude practice as intentionally evoking thankfulness and appreciation for anything in our lives. Maybe you feel grateful that your parents are alive. Maybe you feel grateful that you live in a first world country. Or maybe you feel grateful that you found matching socks this morning. This is a good place to start, to evoke gratitude for all that good stuff. And it's usually what we see marketed as the poster version of gratitude. Appreciate the small things just as much as the big things. And while I completely agree, what I'm here to talk about is the less intuitive act of feeling grateful for pain just as much as for pleasure. Shortly after I'd started my dream job of working with clients, I stood in my very own office, taking it all in, and my eyes welled with tears, happy tears, in awe of how all the moments that preceded that moment, the good and the bad, led me to be that woman standing there. I reflected on the losses, the moves, the breakups, the family breakdowns, the illnesses, the rejections, the mistakes, the embarrassments, the everything that hasn't quote-unquote gone my way. And I felt genuinely and strangely thankful for all of it. I felt grateful for the painful stuff that had happened to me completely out of my control, and for all the stuff that I was responsible for. I was able to look at in that moment with self-forgiveness, compassion, and gratitude. Why? How? What's the secret? Meaning. Meaning is the gift of gratitude. When we can assign meaning to our pain and discomfort, we can be thankful for it. German philosopher Nietzsche said, quote, "He who has a why to live for can bear with almost any how." No matter our life circumstances, if we can give them purpose, we can embrace all of them. So where do we find our quote-unquote why, our purpose, our meaning? Just the other day, I was at one of my favorite local coffee shops and I was reminded of this concept. This cafe sets out their coffee cup lids with little sayings handwritten on them in Sharpie, so you get to pick which lid suits you best that day. Or as I once heard one of the baristas say to a customer, "Let the lid choose you." The one I grabbed that day said, "Sometimes you win, sometimes you learn." Sometimes you win. The wins are those moments, people, or things in your life that fall right in line with our idea of happiness. The ones where we don't have to work to feel grateful for. In line with the examples I mentioned earlier, maybe a win is literally winning the lottery. I doubt there's a single person listening that would have to intentionally assign gratitude or meaning to winning the lottery. It's kind of already there. It happens automatically. Why does it happen automatically? Well, because the outcome, obtaining wealth, lines up pretty well with our idea of how a perfect life might look. Feeling excited, affording high-end material items, traveling more, not having to stress about finances, maybe quitting our job, the list goes on. But what about the sometimes you learn part of my coffee lid? The sometimes you learn moments are those when life doesn't line up with our expectations of it. And when we expect to live a life free from pain, we are always sadly mistaken. Sometimes you learn. That is the meaning. That is the why to our how. Learning, growing, evolving, these are all the things that give meaning to our pain. This is where we turn our human dilemmas into accomplishments, into triumphs even. As we discussed in episode 1, growth usually comes from feeling uncomfortable. My mom would often say that to me growing up. She'd say, "You're going to feel scared right before you grow." So let's go back to all those not-so-great life experiences that I thought about when standing in my new office. I was able to make friends with these memories because of all the learning and growth that came with them. And I was able to forgive my poor choices because I recognized why they happened, I learned from them, I took accountability, I even made amends where appropriate, and now I don't have to worry so much about repeating them. Believing that every single thing that occurs in our life has meaning is what makes us untouchable. It's what protects us from falling victim to outside circumstance. So here's the golden nugget. Everything in life, everything that comes into our consciousness is a gift. Why? Because we either get to embrace it if it's a win, or we get to learn from it and grow if it doesn't line up with our expectations. Egyptian entrepreneur and author Mo Gwidar says, "Happiness is your events minus your expectations." In other words, we can achieve true contentment when we accept reality as it is, even when it's painful, rather than suffering by replaying the pain over and over again. Looking at every moment as a gift, that is gratitude. And that is why gratitude itself is the ultimate gift. Let's talk some more about normalizing pain and assigning meaning to it. Pain ceases to be suffering the moment it has meaning. Austrian psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl speaks deeply on this in his best-selling book, Man's Search for Meaning, first released in 1946, the year after World War II ended. "We currently live in a time in society where pain is generally regarded as something to be avoided. There's lots of stuff out there on how to feel good, how to feel pleasure, how to be happy, and that's all fine and well, truly, because there are so many things in life that do and should make us feel good without going through pain. But this unfortunately fuels the misconception that life should be free from pain, and that any sign of it is unwarranted, that any pain is a flaw in our lives. This is where we get stuck, when we fall victim to our pain, when we hate the world for unfolding the way it does, or we hate ourselves for what we have or haven't done." Frankl turns this narrative on its head in his retelling of being a prisoner of the Holocaust. Someone that had everything taken away from them said that pain is something to be worthy of, that we must be worthy of our pain. We don't often use worthiness and pain in the same sentence, do we? Worthiness is defined as the quality of being good enough or deserving of. We should be good enough or deserving of pain? What does he mean by this? To qualify as worthy of pain in Frankl's eyes is to view pain as a gift of transformation, a gift for meaning-making. When we view it as anything other than a gift, we aren't worthy of it, and so it's wasted on us. Let's pause for a second to make an important distinction. Practicing gratitude is not the same as toxic positivity. Toxic positivity is what occurs when we try to minimize or dismiss painful experiences or emotions through encouragement rather than empathy. This can look like sweeping issues under the rug by telling ourselves that everything's fine when, right now, it's not. Let's say you've just been let go from work unexpectedly. You're likely experiencing a lot of undesired emotions and thoughts. Maybe you're angry, sad, confused. You might be thinking, how will I pay the rent this month? Where will I find another job? These are completely normal, if not expected, responses to such a circumstance. Toxic positivity, however, might show up in a friend saying, "Oh, look on the bright side. At least you have a good resume. Don't worry about it so much." When this voice comes from within ourselves, we're even more likely to dismiss our painful emotions and thoughts. It's an almost impossible expectation to practice gratitude in the immediate moment of shock, hurt, despair. And when we or others try to get us to look on the bright side, what we're doing is invalidating ourselves for feeling pain. Gratitude looks like facing our pain, feeling our pain, validating our pain before assigning meaning to it. We can't sustainably jump straight from pain to pleasure. And we certainly can't sustainably deny pain altogether. Lasting pleasure can come from working through the pain. This always reminds me of the phrase, I had a good cry. Good. The tears were needed then. The tears streamline us to gratitude. As American author Gabby Bernstein says, the miracle isn't how we avoid fear. The miracle is how quickly we return to love. Gratitude helps us return to love. Love for ourselves, others, the world, no matter the circumstance. And this absolutely feels like a miracle, particularly when reading autobiographies of those that have survived the heinous torture of genocide-driven imprisonment, people who had everything taken from them, yet who were able to express gratitude and find meaning in that experience. Edith Eger, 96-year-old Holocaust survivor, describes herself as a realist, not an idealist, for believing that all events in life are neutral and that we assign meaning to them. She describes herself as a survivor, not a victim of circumstance. Edith talks of forgiveness as a way out of victim mentality. She's put herself in the shoes of her camp prison guards and feels sorry for them, describing them as prisoners, prisoners of their bigoted beliefs that genocide was justified. Not only does she feel sorry for them, she describes them as her greatest teachers for all that she's learned about psychological freedom, even under physical imprisonment. In an interview with Dr. Rangan Chatterjee on one of my favorite podcasts, Feel Better, Live More, Edith encourages all of humankind to, quote, let go of the concentration camp you create in your own mind, end quote. To let go of the mindset that keeps us from experiencing gratitude, forgiveness, and growth. I'm reminded of a phenomenon that can help to explain these counterintuitive reactions to pain, and this is called post-traumatic growth. Founded in the mid-90s by psychology researchers Dr. Richard R. and Dr. Lawrence C. Post-traumatic growth defines any positive psychological change resulting from exposure to painful experiences. I bring this up because it's important to remind ourselves that we're not inherently doomed to post-traumatic stress following painful life events. By now, we can see that we are the meaning makers of our lives. If nothing inherently has meaning other than that which we attribute to it, look how much control we have. This is where it's like a superpower. We can, as Frankl famously said, say yes to life in spite of everything. When we recognize the power we have over how we experience our lives, we come to realize how off base our typical and automatic thoughts can be. As American author and comedian Aparna Nancherla says, your brain is an unreliable narrator. There's a famous Alcoholics Anonymous speaker named Sandy Beat, and he tells a story about just how unreliable of a narrator our brains can be. Sandy used to be a part of the USA Marine Corps, and as part of their training, they'd go on 20-mile marches, each carrying 30-pound backpacks. There was a drill sergeant who made a habit of tricking some of the young men. Halfway through the march, the sergeant would tell one of them, "Wow, you're doing great! You've got a 60-pound pack, and the rest of them have a 30-pound pack, and you're trekking on just as well." At this point in his story, Sandy turns to his audience and says, "Guess which kid didn't finish the march?" That quote-unquote kid told himself that his backpack was much more painful than when it was 30 pounds, even though it was in fact 30 pounds and not 60. But because he believed it, he felt it in his shoulders and he exhausted himself. He became a victim of circumstances that were completely psychological. When we're told or expected that we shouldn't succeed, we won't. We won't see a point in continuing on. For the Marine in Sandy's story, the march lost its meaning because the notion of a heavier backpack was paired with the expectation of failure. This happens to us when it's assumed that heavy events, difficult things, will automatically doom us to fail, to be unhappy, to abandon what we've started. But when we tell ourselves that pain has purpose, we can do hard things. I've heard this put into the context of exercising. Try to recall the burn you feel in your arms and legs when you're lifting weights at the gym. Now imagine yourself relaxing on your couch, and suddenly you feel the exact same pain in your arms and legs. For starters, you might be confused and worried about the pain, but most importantly, you'd probably find it excruciating. Why? Because the latter has no identifiable meaning. At the gym, pain equals gain. On your couch, it's much harder to identify the meaning behind your leg and arm pain. This is to illustrate that pain with meaning attached to it hurts far less than when we believe that our pain doesn't have any meaning. With meaning, it might actually be something to look forward to because it makes you stronger, whether that's physically from all the weightlifting or emotionally from psychological workouts like going to therapy. Now, we're not always able to identify the meaning behind our pain. And this is where I find it helpful to return to the notion that we are meaning makers. It has whatever meaning we attribute to it. This ideology goes against traditional narratives on trauma. A lot of the time, and especially in the therapy world, events themselves are referred to as being traumatic. We might identify them as big T traumas, such as the death of a loved one or war, or little t traumas, such as chronic stressors like being bullied or growing up with a parent who has narcissistic behavior. Hungarian and Canadian author and physician Gábor Máté identifies trauma as follows. Trauma is not what happens to you. It is what happens inside of you as a result of what happens to you. Gábor reminds us that trauma is derived from the Greek word for wound, and so he refers to trauma as the psychic wound that exists inside of us resulting from life circumstances. My favorite illustration of this by Gábor is that trauma is not the blow to one's head, it's the concussion they get from it. From this lens, trauma is subjective. A blow to one person's head or one person's life might inflict an intense amount of physical or emotional trauma, but the same blows to another person might not inflict any trauma at all. This could be partially by luck if it's physical trauma, but when it's emotional, what bothers one person and what doesn't bother another is entirely determined by their unique life history and specific expectations of how their life should or shouldn't go. We have so many personal biases, mostly unconscious ones, that will determine how we respond to our life circumstances, how brutal our traumatic wounds feel to us, or whether we will feel wounded in the first place. Here's the good news. Gratitude and meaning can heal these wounds. They don't need to be permanent. Let's take Victor and Eden, for example. For them, they view their imprisonment as a gift, something to be grateful for. And this does not mean that they would wish to go back and relive it, wish it upon others, or even justify the experience. It's that they were able to retreat inward and find purpose for their pain in spite of it all. Victor talks about how no one could take away that meaning from him, no matter that he was stripped of most everything else in his life. Edith has said with the utmost confidence, "There is no hierarchy in trauma." When I first read Gabby Bernstein's quote that I mentioned before, "It's not about avoiding fear, it's how quickly we return to love," I was reminded on theories of homeostasis that I learned about in my evolutionary psychology studies in university. Homeostasis is defined as the state of steadiness of our emotional and physical conditions, steady conditions that allow us to function in the most optimal way. Homeostasis says that our bodies are naturally inclined to bring us back to physical and emotional equilibrium when we're off kilter. For instance, when we're sick, our bodies are working harder to fight through the illness to bring us back to health, back to equilibrium. Now, it's inevitable that we'll get sick sometimes, just as it's inevitable that we will experience emotional disturbances in our life. And just as getting more sleep and fluids can help us recover from a cold, so too can gratitude help us recover from emotional disturbance to bring us back to neutral. I have type 1 diabetes, and I wear a constant glucose monitor on my arm, CGM for short. My CGM tracks my blood glucose levels on a graph hooked up to my phone. The graph is split into three categories. Red represents below optimal blood glucose, yellow represents above optimal glucose, and gray represents within the optimal range. As a diabetic, it would be an unrealistic goal to never be out of range, so the goal is to just maximize my time in the optimal zone, in equilibrium. The same goal can be applied to pain. When we're out of range, we haven't failed. That's life. We're going to be out of range sometimes. Sometimes because of circumstances beyond our control, and sometimes it's our own doing. When I get mad at myself when my blood sugar is high, the stress hormone called cortisol is released in my body, which raises my blood sugar even more, and the high lasts for hours or even a whole day. But the moment I surrender to the high and take appropriate action without getting angry, it descends to normal range faster than if I were mad. Every single time. The same is true of everyone's stress response, diabetic or not. When we get mad and resist pain, our cortisol will spike unnecessarily and prolong our pain. Similarly, if I ignored my highs and lows altogether, I couldn't treat them, and I'd have equal or even more severe consequences of suffering. A reminder that being in denial of our pain also leads it to persist. Accepting pain is the key to getting back to equilibrium. On my CGM, it gives me a percentage of my quote-unquote time in range, and so I'm calling this my time in range theory. Let's go back to the golden nugget in this episode. Everything in life is a gift. Why? Because we either get to embrace it if it's a win, or we get to learn from it and grow if it's not. A common expression tied to this sentiment is that everything happens for a reason. Now, this can rub some people the wrong way, since it's often been associated with religious beliefs, with there being a God or a higher power at work in our lives. Since there's absolutely no way to prove or disprove the ideas one way or another, let's reclaim that phrase and place it into our hands. We are the meaning makers. Instead of asking for reasons and meanings outside of ourselves, let's work on co-creating meaning from the right here and now. There might be some larger-than-life force at play with a master plan, but since we'll never know, let's look at ourselves as the masters of our own plan. Just look at what we can do by challenging our narratives on our pain and in how we live. We physiologically change our minds and our bodies, so let's give ourselves some more credit here. There's a proposal made by Eckhart Tolle that I find incredibly helpful with this. He advocates for us to, quote, accept each moment as if we had chosen it, end quote. Accepting each moment as if we had chosen it. Now, that sounds pretty tough when it feels like the world is falling apart all around you, but tune back into gratitude for the falling apart as a gift of transformation, a transformation so grand that you can actually imagine choosing it for yourself, choosing the hardship for yourself, and most importantly, sharing openly with others to give the pain meaning, co-creating meaning. I found this practice to be hugely transformative in my own life to heal the ache of large and small emotional wounds. For instance, on a small scale, a few years ago, I hit a curb in the mall parking lot and blew my tire. I didn't tell anyone or ask anyone for help besides roadside assistance. I got the spare put on and I planned to go to the auto shop the next morning. At the time, I was overwhelmed with school and was already frustrated at how little savings I had. So for the next 12 hours, I was a ball of anger, self-hatred, and regret. The next day, I went to the body shop and was quoted an out-of-budget amount for the repairs. Finally, I caved and called my parents for advice. And this is what happened. My mom and stepdad drove out to my place with my winter tires, and we got to spend a whole afternoon together. Yes, there were still some fees to be paid, but it also bought me priceless time spent with family. Because I assigned meaning to the tire blowing, I ended up feeling grateful that night for my family, my safety, for even having a car to begin with. I accepted reality as it was, rather than staying in suffering and resisting it. What was done, and I accepted it as if I had chosen it. What made it easy to accept was sharing it with someone. My Nana used to say, "A burden shared is a burden halved." And I often think of her when I get stuck trying to solve all my problems on my own, thinking that I don't need any help. I couldn't move to a place of gratitude without first accepting and then sharing the pain. Now, on a more significant impact than blowing a tire, I was first diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 6 years old, and growing up, I experienced my fair share of woe is me moments, feeling sorry for myself that I had to occupy the full-time job of managing my diabetes so that I stay safe, healthy, and ultimately alive. As I got older, when I'd experience a woe is me moment, a message of gratitude started to ring in my ears, one that I heard frequently from my family and healthcare team. They'd tell me how I'd more than likely have a completely different personality and lifestyle if I didn't have diabetes, that my mind-body awareness, organization, and self-care, all very important requirements for healthy diabetes management, might not be as intuitive, as second nature, if I didn't have the responsibility of managing my condition. So who knows where I'd be or who I'd be without it? It's a part of who I am, there's nothing I can do to change that, and so to get out of suffering, out of my woe, I still challenge myself to not only accept my condition, but to feel grateful for it. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm more than open to a cure, but regardless of what the future may hold, I'm quicker at accepting and feeling grateful for how diabetes has shaped me into who I am and how I experience the world. In the words of Gabby Bernstein, when it comes to living with type 1 diabetes, I'm now much faster at returning to love after I experience fear. By following this philosophy of gratitude, I can maximize my time in range on my blood glucose monitor, and we can all maximize our time in range of peace, calm, and contentedness in equilibrium, no matter our life circumstances. That day that I spoke of earlier when I stood in my office teary with gratitude was the same day that I found myself booking an appointment to get a symbol of gratitude tattooed on my forearm. And now here I am, in my hand, a coffee cup with a lid that tells me that life is a gift. On my forearm, a tattoo that tells me the exact same thing. And a few inches up on my wrist, a MedAlert bracelet positioned just right as a daily reminder to be grateful for pain. Let's bring this home. Life isn't about denying pain. It's about how we find meaning in pain. We can't find meaning in pain if we don't first acknowledge that it exists and that it's normal. When we accept the pleasure and the pain in life as gifts, we're practicing gratitude. The gifts are either knowledge and growth or being able to relax into things just as they are. The sooner we can approach every single moment as a gift, the sooner we're worthy of pain. When we're worthy of pain, this means that we thank it as a meaningful teacher, as a guide. The sooner we can be grateful for our pain, the sooner we will go beyond it. When we go beyond it, we spend more time in range, experiencing the peace, calm, and contentedness that exists in each and every one of us. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, it's always appreciated for you to follow Mind the Gaps on your podcast streaming platform and to share it with your friends and family. To stay up to date on the show, you can find me on Instagram at kirsten.davidson. Thanks for minding the gaps with me today. I'll see you next time on the journey out of our comfort zone and into our growth zone.